For WKAR News, I'm Scott Pohl. The crisis of lead getting into Flint's water supply is the focus of a new book by freelance reporter Anna Clark. It's called The Poisoned City, Flint's Water and the American Urban Tragedy. In a recent FaceTime conversation, Clark tells me about her coverage of the Flint story.
I did my first story that was explicitly about the Flint water crisis in fall of 2015, and I did a number of different pieces for different national publications before the opportunity to do this as a book came up.
So would this be considered something of a compilation of the stories you were working on along the way, or how would you describe the book?
I definitely did draw on some of the early reporting I did, but I also did a great deal of original reporting and a lot of research. Honestly, it was really a gift to have the opportunity to spend a few years really diving deep into what was happening here and what the circumstances were that made this city vulnerable to a crisis like this in the first place. I had more time to read books that others had written, and I audited classes in environmental justice and water law and things like that to help, you know, catch up on some of the really pressing intersecting issues that were unfolding in Flint. And also to meet more people too, and to spend a lot of time in the community and get to hear the stories and follow it as it progressed over the last few years and is still progressing now. So while the book definitely does come out of a lot of the reporting I'd done about Flint's water and really about some of the similar issues about infrastructure and urban policy going back many years, the book's really a unique thing.
Anna, you bring up in the book one problem that I hadn't really thought about with regard to the Flint water crisis, and that has to do with Flint's water infrastructure and why prices for water service were so high in the city of Flint. It had to do with the fact that the water supply system in Flint was built for a much larger population. The population has shrunk over the years. It needs to be maintained. That need doesn't fall down because of a falling population. And yet, as the population shrinks, the price has to go up. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms before.
Right. And in that sense, this has really been a slow burn emergency that goes back to the late 1960s, when the city first began losing population in the wake of a lot of civil rights laws and Supreme Court decisions. And the shrinking cities around the country have been dealing with this struggle for a long time. You know, the water infrastructure is not only built to serve more than twice the number of people who live there, but it's also built in an oversized fashion to help support this like huge industrial sector, all those big GM plants, you know? So there's like a wider circumference of a lot of the water mains, you know? And when there's far fewer people paying into it, these people have been obliged to pay more keep up with it, with the maintenance. And even that has been a struggle. I mean, there's been so much deferred maintenance. There's like a constant battle with leaks. I heard up to 40% of Flint's water was being lost through leaks and breaks and things like that. That also brought costs up. And ultimately, the city residents were paying some of the most expensive water rates in the nation, if not the most expensive water rates in the nation. And given that this is a city that also has about a 40% poverty rate, it was really difficult. It was struggling with water shutoffs. It was struggling with people who were being arrested for having illegal water hookups, you know, and prosecuted for that. This is what set the tone for a lot of dissatisfaction for people wanting some kind of change, some kind of relief. This is part of the momentum for why the city was interested in switching to a new water source. The idea was that the Detroit water system that had been serving it for about 50 years was not working with the city to help make rates more affordable, that they didn't have a seat at the bargaining table, there are a lot of like non-negotiables in the contract with Detroit. And so ultimately, a lot of people were supportive of Flint switching to a different water source, in hopes that it would reduce their rates. Unfortunately, the switch, even before all the troubles became widely known, did not solve these structural problems that made the water so expensive in the first place. And when the emergency manager, just a couple months after Flint's water switch in 2014, the emergency manager at the time signed a two-year budget that included water rate increases. And so people were like, what? and then the story unfolds from there, where the expensive water that they were buying was also toxic.
We're talking with Anna Clark. Her new book about the Flint water crisis is called The Poisoned City. Anna, I've asked you to read a passage from the book. Can you do that?
I can. I thought I would read just the first paragraph. This is how the book opens. On a hot day in the summer of 2014, in the Civic Park neighborhood where Pastor Sherman McCathern preached in Flint, Michigan, water rushed out of a couple of fire hydrants. Puddles formed on the dry grass and splashed the skin of the delighted kids who ran through it. But the spray looked strange. The water was coming out dark as coffee for hours, McCathern remembered, the shock of it caught in his throat. Something is wrong here.
Anna Clark, reading from her new book, The Poisoned City. Anna, some of the characters in your book are well known to us, like Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha at the Hurley Medical Center. We've recently talked with her about her new book about Flint called What the Eyes Don't See. Virginia Tech researcher Mark Edwards. I want to ask you about Miguel del Toro, though. He's an important figure in your book and one that we're less familiar with.
Yes, he played a really pivotal role in bringing this water emergency to the public eye, but he has also been largely in the background of this story too. He is, he works with the EPA's office in Chicago, and he's the person that Leanne Walters, a prominent resident in the city who helped raise the alarm bells about what was going on. The two of them connected the spring of 2015. Leanne was extremely alarmed about the water quality in her house. Her son, one of her young twins, had been lead poisoned, and she was looking for answers. And Del Toro really investigated this. You know, he went to her house. They did water tests. He ultimately put together a memo that he delivered to his supervisors at the EPA. Officials with the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, Mark Edwards at Virginia Tech, Leanne herself. And this eight-page memo not just detailed how there was a burgeoning lead crisis in Flint's water, but also how the testing techniques that had been that the state had been relying on were systematically underestimating how much lead was in the drinking water. So he showed how the problems in the state's numbers for that it was pointing to say that the water was fine. Leanne ended up delivering this memo to Kurt Guyette. He's an investigative journalist working with ACLU of Michigan. He did a story on this and a video that was picked up by Michigan Radio. And eventually the story began moving forward in a whole new way because journalists were, for the first time, armed with data from an EPA official, no less, that contradicted the official claims that the water was fine. So it was a huge breakthrough, what he did. And if you go back and read that eight-page memo, it just outlines everything. It outlines like what the unique problems were in Flint, but also how these sampling how the problems with the water testing should make those of us who live in other communities that have lead pipes very worried as well.
Anna, the epilogue in your book speaks to a certain level of comeback in the Flint story. Can you talk about the epilogue of your book, The Poisoned City?
Sure. Well, the epilogue returns to the community in the Civic Park neighborhood of Flint, where I pay a lot of attention throughout the book. I mean, what they're doing in this neighborhood that has been very much disinvested in, they're struggling with a lot of vacancy, a lot of poverty, just all the kind of issues that go with that. They're really reimagining what a city can be like. And here in this historic neighborhood that had been built by GM, that was designed for workers and their families, specifically white workers and their families. It was a segregated neighborhood. The community there is repurposing some of these vacant houses. They're turning them into places like an agriculture house that where folks can learn canning of the vegetables that they grow in the vacant lot outside. There's another vacant house. It's a wellness house that's especially important now in the long-term recovery needs of the city to meet where folks can meet some of their health needs. Young people are being apprenticed to learn the skills of rehabbing houses. And altogether, they're just like, there's a kind of connectedness and warmth and a spirit of all are welcome that I think is going to be, is just not only beautiful and inspiring, but going to be fundamental to Flint's bright future.
Reporter Anna Clark, her new book is The Poisoned City, Flint's Water and the American Urban Tragedy. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
For WKAR News, I'm Scott Pohl.